Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
All right, welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Sean Hyken of Bleacher Report and NBC Sports, and with me, as always, Cody Westerlund of 670 The Score. Remember, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Leave us a five-star review. We're on Audio Boom as well. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls. Email us any basketball questions or advertising inquiries at LockedOnBulls@gmail.com.
And it is the most boring day of the sports year, the entire calendar, perhaps, Sean.
You're probably right.
Tomorrow will probably be maybe one of the second most boring days. There's no baseball going on. There's really no nothing. I guess the British Open.
You're not psyched
tomorrow.
About the ESPYs?
I am not huge on the ESPYs. I do want to watch the Craig Sager presentation. I think that will be really cool. But right now, really all we have on the entire sports calendar is NBA Summer League, which we will definitely get to because the Bulls, of course, are seeded number two in the Summer League out of 24 teams. We'll get to your Twitter questions later, too. We'll get to the big addition of Isaiah Cannon for the Bulls. And by big addition, I mean 12th or 13th man, probably. But we wanted to backtrack a little bit and start with Rajon Rondo's introductory press conference in Chicago last Thursday and get into a little bit of the Rondo Fred Hoiberg dynamic that, Sean, that's going to be really, really important this year, don't you think?
It absolutely is, and I really see a lot of potential for that to go very wrong, very badly. Like you can even kind of see the seeds sown of it at the introductory press conference where Fred wasn't there, but someone asked Rondo about how he thinks they're going to fit together. And I don't know the exact wording, but I believe what Rondo said was something to the effect of, you know, Fred isn't a dominant personality and he likes when players give input, which, I mean, that to me, that just translates right into, I'm going to be the one running the offense. I'm going to be the one calling the plays. And then at a shoot-around the other day in Las Vegas, Fred said that he sees Rondo as another coach on the floor.
Is that a good or bad thing?
If they're on the same page about what they're going to run, then I think it's a good thing. If Fred is really willing to take a step back and kind of let Rondo call plays, then that would lead to not as much tension, then I think that would be a good thing. But, you know, I think there's definitely potential for them to clash over who's in charge and who's the one deciding what plays they run on offense. Now, I know Fred isn't as much of a micromanager of that kind of stuff as Rick Carlisle is, and that's a coach that Rondo has clashed with in the past, but it's... I mean, the warning signs are there. They're all saying the right things right now because they just signed him and they wanted to make it seem like it's a good idea. But I see a lot of ways for this to go badly.
Yeah, and Rondo has been in Vegas for at least a few days with the Bulls Summer League team, just working out, hanging around the team, getting some FaceTime with Fred Hoiberg, trying to get on the same page and everything. And part of the reason they signed Rondo, other than the fact that they had to have a point guard because they were going to be awful at that position if they didn't, was he and Hoiberg had a good couple first meetings. And Rondo said what he kind of attributed what he likes about Hoiberg, and this goes back to that he's not a dominant personality as a coach overriding you, which Rondo struggled with when he played for Rick Carlisle in Dallas, was Rondo said, quote, it's more of a read-based offense. It's not so much dictated on calling a set every time down the floor. I like to make my plays off reactions, end quote. So that was what was interesting to me. I think Rondo knows he's the smartest guy on the basketball floor, and he's not afraid to act like it, and sometimes he's not afraid to tell people. I mean, another one of his quotes at the press conference was, quote, I don't BS around, which I found absolutely entertaining. And like, just this whole entity of Rondo in Chicago, I think is going to be a blast because the Bulls are back to relevance in regards to being in the headlines. And Rondo's going to have a lot to do that with, have a lot to do with that. Obviously, Dwayne Wade's going to have a lot to do with that.
See, that's
as
the
well.
Other thing is like we're talking about the Rondo thing. Now you throw Dwayne Wade in there also. Like that's two more guys that, you know, the hashtag three alphas that Rondo has already talked about. But that's just, it's going to be so interesting and it's going to be so different from what we had last year.
Yeah, I think the three alphas, I think we really need to make sure that we never let this fall by the wayside. He said it before he'd even really taken a dribble as a Chicago Bull, Rondo did. Like, this needs to be referenced in any important column, on air, in our podcast, everywhere all the time. Like, we got to run with three alphas all year. When the Bulls are killing it, we run with it. When they're struggling, we run with it. When the alphas can't decide who has the ball. Like, this needs to be a thing all year. We can't let this go by the wayside.
I think you and I are in total agreement about that. I'm going to tweet that nearly as often as I tweet that picture of Tom Thibodeau laughing that people are fans of that I tweet. I've actually got several in-person compliments about that picture in Las Vegas this week.
Did you get compliments from Tibbs, though? Is he aware of it or just everyone else?
I think you didn't
catch up with Tibbs.
I did catch up with Tom for a little bit. I did. The subject of that picture did not come up. I think he likes to pretend that he's not on Twitter, even though I'm pretty sure he is. But... you know, just a quick aside there, you know, I didn't really talk to Tom that much about Bulls stuff, but we talked about the Timberwolves. He's excited about, you know, what that situation is right now. And Chris Dunn, I thought, looked real good. He was one of the most impressive guys I saw this week in Vegas. Now, I know it's summer league and you can't really take too much away from it, but, you know, I think you can see why the Bulls wanted Chris Dunn so badly before the draft and why Tom drafted him where he did. And I think he's going to be a really good fit in Minnesota.
Yeah, like, he's as good as kind of the summer league glimpse, and as you said, that's a huge grain of salt to go with it. That's a great pickup for the Timberwolves, but he's also fitting into their future vision. Like, they were involved in the Jimmy Butler trade talks, but if you go think about it, Chris Dunn fits their time frame far better than Jimmy Butler, because he's a guy who went to college. I can't remember if he went for 3 or 4 years there to Providence.
He was a four-year guy.
Yeah, he's a four-year guy, so he's older, kind of fits with Wiggins and Towns in that age range instead of Jimmy, who would have been 3 or 4 years in front. So, like, heck, they might have three really, really good basketball players when right now we keep talking about them saying they have two studs. They might have, like, three. They could have three alphas too, Sean. Three alphas in Chicago, three alphas in Minneapolis.
Three alphas in Minneapolis, and that's not even counting the Timberwolves just signing Jordan Hill, former number 7 overall pick today. I don't know if you saw that.
Was that a bigger signing than the Bulls signing Isaiah Cannon, or was that lower profile? Because I feel like at this point in free agency, to me, everything's just mushing together and nothing has any meaning to me anymore.
Well, until Deion Waiters signs his 40, you know, his you know, $17 million a year offer sheet with the Nets, which Fred Katz and I talked about on the last episode, which you should check out. But yeah, Isaiah Cannon, it's a guy the Bulls signed.
He averaged 11 points a game last year for the 76ers. So God bless him for playing for the 76ers, I guess you would say.
But well, he was originally a second round pick of the Rockets, and then he was traded, I believe,
two seasons ago, at
the deadline for KJ McDaniels. I want to say that was the same trade, but it was just one of those trades where like the Sixers knew that they weren't going to be able to re-sign KJ McDaniels during the trust the process era, and so Daryl Morey did Sam Hinkie a solid by doing that trade. So that was kind of what that trade was. But yeah, he's kind of been between Houston and Philly in the D League during his career so far.
Yeah, and I think everyone needs to know the vital statistics on Isaiah Cannon. Played 25.5 minutes per game last year, so not a lot. A good amount, but not like a leading minutes guy. And he launched 485 three-point shots, which ranked 11th most in the NBA, which is just an astronomical rate. And he shoots 36.3% from beyond the arc, which is fine, is probably the word to use. Okay, fine. But league average for reference is usually 35% or just over.
Yeah, so that's decent. It's not to the point where, you know, you have to really like plan for him as a threat, but it's respectable. You have to at least put a guy on him.
Yeah, so I chuckled a little bit because the Bulls did want shooting and they found a shooter who's better than like all the other shooters they have that are going to play besides Doug McDermott. But they still really found a guy who's more of a willing shooter than a good shooter. You know what I mean? So I would temper.
If you want to talk about a willing shooter, I found I'm on Basketball Reference also, and they have per 36 minutes stats and per 100 possession stats. So per 36 minutes, Isaiah Cannon attempts 9 3-pointers per 36 minutes in according to Basketball Reference, and per 100 possessions, 12.3 3-point attempts.
So those are basically like Steph Curry attempt numbers, or like Kobe in his final season in a Lakers
Ricky
uniform.
Davis numbers. No. These buckets are just not going to get themselves.
So, I mean, is he going – what's he going to do when he gets on the floor for the Bulls? Where's he fit in here? Can he craft the second unit for them?
He's going to get buckets. That's where he fits in.
That's where he fits in.
That's what he does. He gets buckets.
The one thing we should note is that his role, I guess, is Cannon is more of a shooter, whereas Jaren Grant, the Bulls' second-year guard they acquired from the Knicks in the Derrick Rose trade, he can shoot some from the outside, but they view him more as a pick-and-roll player. So if you're thinking, like, how does this fit, Grant and Cannon bring different things to the floor. So they're not a redundant basketball player by any means, but it's going to be up to Fred Hoiberg on a lot of nights to pick and choose, like, when to use him, because Cannon's a guy who can give you some instant offense off the bench, and he's a guy who can shoot you out of a game in probably a two-minute stretch while not giving you anything defensively either. So it's kind of a catch-22, a double-edged sword there, I would think.
Right, I think they view Cannon's role as something similar to what Aaron Brooks has been the last couple of years for them, and what Nate Robinson was a couple of years before that, just kind of a smaller guard who can just come in and, you know, I can't imagine they're going to be playing him. If he plays more than like 12 to 15 minutes a game, then something really badly has gone wrong with the Bulls. So I think they just kind of view him as a change of pace guy. He's not going to play that many minutes, but just another guy who can come in and provide some offense. I think that's kind of the mindset with that. And, you know, it was a 2-year minimum deal. There's no risk there. It's fine. Yeah. I have no problem with the signing. I just don't think he's going to be a major contributor.
Yeah, it's a 2-year deal. I believe there's a team option, according to reports, on the second year, and it's $2.2 million total. So, I mean, it's just a little bit of money. Not a big deal there at all. Now, I do think, to picture in too, Spencer Dinwiddie is the fourth and final Bull, I guess you would say, in the point guard mix or rotation. And we did get a question from our good friend Alama on Twitter. He said, what on earth is going on with Spencer Dinwiddie's contract? Spencer Dinwiddie was released, and then he reappeared on the sidelines dressing for the Bulls in summer league. And the roster maneuvering was simply to open up space for Dwayne Wade to get a little more money. Right, Sean?
Yeah, I talked to a couple of Bulls people out in Vegas this week about kind of what the deal was with that, because when he was waived, I was kind of expecting them to not bring him back, especially when they announced the summer league roster and he wasn't on it. But then he played in their first game and he was sitting there on the bench with them. And so what I was told by a couple of people in the organization was that they basically his salary for next year was unguaranteed. It was like $980,000. It was pretty close to the minimum. So they waived him just to clear that money off their books in order to have the money to sign Dwayne Wade, just free up a little bit of extra money. But they basically, it was one of those things they did, and the Blazers just did the same exact thing with Cliff Alexander also, okay, where they said that, they basically told him, look, we're going to waive you to free up this money, and then once you clear waivers, we're going to invite you to training camp. You'll have a chance to make the roster. But it was purely a bookkeeping thing. He looked okay at Summer League. I don't know how much you can take from that, but he looked pretty good at times. I think he has a real shot at making the roster. That's all going to shake out in training camp. But, you know, that's a guy that I know the Bulls like, considering they brought him back after they waived him. If it was someone they didn't think could make the roster, they would have just let him go after they waived him. But, you know, it seems like he's a guy they think is part of their future plans in some way.
Yeah, I mean, end of the bench guy, maybe stick around all season. He had 13 points last night for the Bulls in their victory over the defending champion Summer League Spurs. And that moved Chicago to 3-0. The Bulls, by virtue of going undefeated in pool play, a well-earned off day today. they get the winner of the Mavericks and Bucks tomorrow night in a Summer League round of 16 game. Only four victories separate the Bulls and their Summer League team from championship glory. Sean, are they going to get it done? And if they do, who are these guys that are getting the job done for them in Vegas Summer League?
I think we might see another Bulls championship. And, you know, this goes right back to what Gar Forman said at the press conference around the Derrick Rose trade. He was saying that the Bulls have the most success over the last 10 years in the Eastern Conference. And I think this Summer League record so far, this 3-0 with a chance to really go for the championship here, I think that's just an extension of that. It just shows what a winning organization they are.
Yeah, you know, I read the Zach Lowe piece on ESPN.com, and he had a hilarious line in which he pointed out no one has ever pushed a streak of consecutive playoff bursts harder than the Bulls did before their run came to an end last year. And it's made all the more funny by the fact that 16 out of 30 teams in the NBA make the playoffs. They're acting like it's like baseball playoffs where, like, you know, 10 of the teams make it out of 30 or 8 in the old days. Like, if you have a competent organization in a big market and you have a good coach, one-star player, you should make the playoffs every year, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely the kind of thing that we're like, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like when you put on your resume that like you don't have enough job experience, so you have to put down like, oh, I babysat one summer, like just stuff like that to pad it out. Or I remember when I don't like to get into politics on here, but I remember when Sarah Palin was first named as John McCain's running mate, she was doing one of those TV interviews and not a lot of people knew who she was. And somebody asked her about her like foreign policy experience, and it was like, what countries has she been to? And she was like, well, Canada, Mexico. So it's the Bulls trumpeting their regular season success and their times making the playoffs in the last 10 years is sort of the equivalent of that.
Hey, anyone that's trying to boost their resume, I'm all for. I'm going to get a chuckle out of it. I had a friend in college who, when he was in high school, he was like the guy that stood outside the pizza place and like hoisting the little cardboard sign that said like $5 pizzas or buy two large, just get one free.
Right.
He put on his resume at the end of that summer, director of marketing for that. And that is like, I think that is just like the 100 emoji. Like that's straight fire.
It's a power move.
It is absolutely incredible. And I really like that. So anytime you can get creative, you got to do it. Moving on to another Twitter question. Anyone on the Bulls Summer League team a dark horse for a roster spot? Sean, you were there. It doesn't seem like it. What do you have to say, though?
I don't really have anything for you. There's one guy that was pretty impressive, actually, is Jack Cooley.
Okay.
Just a big man. I think he played in Utah a little bit, or, you know, for a couple of seasons here or there. Maybe he got bounced around in some 10-day contracts, but he looked like he was a pretty competent big man. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a camp invite. There's no way he makes the roster, but that's the one guy I would say that kind of stood out of the guys who aren't already on the roster. Mostly when I was watching the games, the guys I was paying attention to are the guys that we kind of have to pay attention to, and that's, you know, Bobby Portis, Jerian Grant, Chris Felicio, Denzel Valentine, Spencer Dinwiddie, the guys that actually have a chance at being on the roster and playing real minutes for the Bulls. So I wouldn't count on anybody from Summer League having kind of a Cristiano Felicio moment where he was just kind of one of those anonymous guys on the Bulls Summer League roster last year, and he impressed them enough that he got a camp invite and then eventually made the team. So I didn't really see anybody that stood out to me like that this year.
Yeah, and we should note too, the Bulls roster is now at 15 players because second round draft pick Paul Zipser has agreed to a 2-year deal, according to multiple reports from overseas, I believe, stemming from his agency. So
yeah, his agent tweeted that he agreed to a 2-year deal with the Bulls.
So if he's in the picture, that takes their roster to 15 guys, and that's the limit in the NBA. Obviously, you can only dress 13 in a game or whatnot, but 15 is the maximum limit. So to add someone from the Summer League team would be pushing someone else out. And Spencer Dinwiddie, as we mentioned, that we're saying 15 if Dinwiddie's in the picture, if he's like the 15th man. If he gets pushed out, maybe there's another dark horse or you sign someone later. Maybe Taj Gibson still gets traded at some point. I don't know. He has a fair contract, easily movable, could help a contender off the bench, be a good guy there. But for right now, the Bulls are, it seems like their roster is kind of full, right?
Yeah, it is. And I would not imagine that anybody from Summer League is going to really be a serious threat to make the roster. You know, the only way I think that they would even have a spot is A, if Dinwiddie doesn't stick, and B, if they trade Taj for something that isn't a player, if they get back a draft pick for it or something, yeah. Then they have an open roster spot. And I believe they still have, unless they used part of it on Zipser. We don't know the terms of his contract yet, but since he was a second-round pick, I would imagine he probably got something close to the minimum. But they still, after they got the Rondo and Wade deals done, they still had the $2.9 million room exception left over. I don't know if they used part of that on Zipser or if they used any of that on Isaiah Cannon. I think Cannon, just based on the numbers, I'm guessing that was a minimum deal, which doesn't count against the cap. But I think the roster, unless they trade Taj, I think it's pretty much set as it is.
Yeah, and we want to say the signing of Dwayne Wade should be official probably sometime later this week, maybe as soon as tomorrow for the Bulls, or Wednesday if you're listening to this on Wednesday. Dwayne Wade did throw up pictures on his Snapchat on Monday night, I believe, that he was in Chicago at the Bulls practice facility, the Advocate Center. He was posing for some pictures. I think he took a video of the Bulls championship kind of plaques and pictures that they have on the wall and such. So Dwayne Wade has been in Chicago. It's a lot of financial stuff, a lot of fine print is the reason he's not officially a Bull yet, but they're figuring all that out. He won't get introduced until late in the month because of a promotional trip overseas, but soon enough Dwayne Wade will be a Chicago Bull. One thing I did want to get back to before we get out of here, Sean, was Denzel Valentine hasn't shot very well from outside in the summer league. What do you make of that so far, and is he getting good shots when you watched him play? Was he just nervous, anxious? Like, Gar Forman has said, we need Denzel Valentine and Doug McDermott to shoot the ball. So this is kind of a question that's a really big deal to ask how it's going to translate to the regular season.
Yeah, I would say not to read too much into that. He is getting he is getting some pretty good looks, and yeah, he hasn't been making them. He did say himself that it was a lot of nerves that was the reason that he hasn't been making these shots. But then you have to keep in mind Doug McDermott last year in summer league, he shot about 12% from 3-point range, and this year this past season he shot 42.5% from three. So I wouldn't really read too much into it. Denzel is going to get plenty of opportunities, and it's going to be different when he's actually against NBA competition, and more importantly when he has a point guard like Rondo. For as much as we talk about how we don't love the fit of Rondo, he is a guy that is a great passer and is going to be able to get his teammates into good situations to take shots, so he's going to get guys plenty of open looks.
Yeah, the Bulls, they could trot out, maybe an Isaiah Cannon, Doug McDermott, Nico Mirotic lineup. You trot out those three, then you got three shooters out there then. That could be a interesting lineup combo for some sort of second quarter minutes if you think about it. And then a guy like Jimmy Butler or Dwayne Wade wants to be the initiator there and have the ball in his hands a lot. That could work out for the Bulls, really. Denzel Valentine, too, stick in a lineup like that. The Bulls should probably kind of stagger their minutes between their stars, but at least adding Cannon gives them a little bit more shooting. And like you said, McDermott shot 42.5%. That was sixth best in the NBA from 3-point range. And his development in 3-point shooting is going to be huge for the Bulls too this year.
Yeah, it really is. And yeah, I mean, there are a lot of different things they can do with the lineups. And that's something that Fred talked about at practice a couple of days ago. They had, they could play McDermott at the four a little bit, which is something he's talked about a little bit. They could do a lot of different things. They could play a lineup with not any real pure point guards. If they want to have Denzel Valentine running the offense, or they want to have Jimmy Butler running the offense, if they don't have Rondo out there, there's a lot of different ways they could go. They can play Taj at the four or the five with different combinations. It's going to be interesting to see how a lot of that stuff shakes out in training camp, but this is all going to be stuff I think we're going to probably get into later in the summer when we don't have stuff to talk about. We can get into some of these positional battles in deeper detail, just to have stuff to talk about and spread some of that out. But That's kind of where the Bulls roster is right now. They've got 15 guys, assuming Dinwiddie sticks. They've got 15 guys under contract. Their depth chart kind of is what it is right now. And I think this is, if everybody stays healthy and the hashtag three alphas can figure out how to play together, I think this is a playoff team. I don't know about much more than that, but I think it's a playoff team, just in terms of the amount of talent they have.
Yeah, I mean, if the Bulls could get a high-profile opening night matchup against the Heat or the Knicks or something, and if they win, we could have three alphas trending on Twitter, you know? I think we could get that going.
Oh, we're going to have three alphas trending on Twitter when they win a random game against, like, the Bucks in February or something.
Well, we could get Bulls-Bucks tomorrow night in Summer League Round of 16, which would renew that rivalry between them dating back to the playoffs.
But Mike Dunleavy is gone. Is it still a rivalry now?
Oh, that's true. Because Dunleavy hit Giannis with an elbow, and then Giannis dump trucked him like a football player, if I remember right.
Yeah, like so that's kind of where that rivalry came from. I don't know if it's really if it's one of those things where like the rivalry is based on like Spurs Heat was sort of thought of as a rivalry for a couple of years, but that was only while LeBron was there. This is like the equivalent of Mike Dunleavy not being in Chicago anymore. Does anybody really care about Bulls Bucks?
Hey, well, this is maybe an August podcast and we have nothing to talk about, or early September.
We'll rank the Bulls' biggest rivalries in the league 1 through 29.
Well, that too, but I wanted to say this point. Mike Dunleavy was kind of low key a dirty player in the NBA. Like there were people that were not ever happy with him at all. But the Bulls got rid of him and they add Dwayne Wade, who is
just straight up one of the dirtiest players in the league.
Yeah, like what? Didn't Wade break Kobe's nose in an All Star game?
He had a thing with Rondo too.
Yeah, like
in the playoffs in 2011, I think he did something with Rondo's arm. I'll have to go back and watch the clip, but I remember that was a thing.
Let's just say the Bulls still have an edge, and they probably have a lot more of an edge than they had before. And this just adds, I think, to the combustibility of it all. Like
alphas might become the three villains.
There you go. Well, you know, we have a West Coast villain in the Warriors now with Kevin Durant in the picture. We need a villain east of the Mississippi, and now everyone loves LeBron because he brought a title home to the city that was starved for one. So we need a new East Coast villain. Not East Coast villain. We're going to have to go east of the Mississippi villain.
Midwest villain.
Maybe the Bulls fulfill that role. I don't know.
We'll find out.
We will find out. Until we do find out, we'll be watching Isaiah Cannon tape for you. I think that's what you said. You're going to spend the next 3 weeks doing to see how he fits
in. I'm going to go on Synergy and just analyze every single clip of Isaiah Cannon, and we're going to have the most detailed. I'm not actually going to do that.
I don't know, but we'll be back. I don't know if we're going to podcast tomorrow, but if not, we'll podcast over the weekend early next week. To wrap up, put a bow on the Bulls Summer League, anything else that happens. There's some greater NBA issues and topics that we can certainly tackle moving forward.
And the other thing is I'm going to be in Vegas again. I'm in Portland right now visiting my family. I was just in Vegas for Summer League. I'm going back down to Vegas next week for Team USA training camp before the Olympics. And Jimmy Butler is on the Olympic team. And I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong, he did the Rachel Nichols show after the Rose trade, but I believe he hasn't talked on the record yet about the Rondo and Wade move. So it'll be interesting to get his thoughts on that. You know, Tom Thibodeau's going to be there. You know, we'll get to catch up with him again. You know, there will be some Bulls storylines there, and I will be there the whole week from that. So, you know, we'll have stuff for you.
We'll get Jimmy's thoughts. If you have any thoughts for us, always feel free to email lockedonbulls@gmail.com. with any basketball questions or advertising inquiries. You can also hit us up on Twitter @LockedOnBulls, @Hyken, @CodyWesterlin. Most of all, please do subscribe on iTunes. Find us on Stitcher. Find us on Audio Boom. Leave us a 5-star review, whatever you think. That's great. We appreciate you listening, as always. Appreciate the questions. And we'll catch you next time, folks.
Yeah, we'll see you guys later. Take it easy.
With the holidays around the corner, now's your chance to save time and money at Safeway's Stock Up Sale. Plus, earn 4 times gas reward points on participating items. Look for tags on items like Honey Nut Cheerios. Select varieties are 4 for $8 with your club card. And select varieties of Betty Crocker Cake Mix, Brownie Mix, or Frosting are 10 for $10 with your club card. Maximum gas reward at participating Sunoco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Safeway stations in a single fill-up up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions, limitations, and exclusions apply. For complete details, go to Safeway.com.